Good afternoon. Welcome to Quality of Life Radio, the radio show. And this is sponsored by Quality of Life Medical and Research Center in Tucson, Arizona. And the show is co-sponsored by Dr. Jack McGettigan and me, Ronald Zack from Ronald Zack Law. And I'm also from Quality of Life Medical, too. I work in both places, wear both hats, as an attorney and as a family nurse practitioner. And I'm here today with Veronica Sternitsky, an attorney from Ronald Zack Law. Dr. Jack McGettigan will not be here today. He's otherwise tied up, indisposed, like they say, but not really in the bathroom or something like that. The you can call the show and join in at 520-790-2040. We are going to be talking today with Sherry Lund, an activist, national activist for probate reform. She is on the line, and we're going to have her starting in the second segment. She's done amazing things to fight probate abuse, guardianship abuse, conservatorship abuse, and we'll hear about that. And yes, this happens here in Arizona. It happens here in Tucson, and we see abuses by fiduciaries, licensed fiduciaries. We see abuses by attorneys. We even see abuses by judges, yes, believe it or not. But before we get there, we like to present some news, because we have a very well-informed audience, and they appreciate hearing some news items on the on medical issues, on legal issues. And we're going to hear news from Veronica Sternitsky, attorney, who's going to talk about some medical and legal things. We have some music that's going to come up there. Legal and medical news, Veronica.
So I hope it's news that you really can't use.
All right. Well, first, there apparently was a prosecutor in Oklahoma State who... he recently was jailed for 30 months for moonlighting as a thug called Vegas G, who swapped sex and drugs for dismissing charges. You know, I didn't know that was how you got rid of charges. Did you, Ron?
I didn't, but it's worth a try.
Apparently. So that's no longer on the table if you're in Oklahoma. And it's probably better that prosecutor isn't around anymore.
Well, it's no longer on that table.
Oh, fair. Also, a couple in Alabama recently purchased a home, and I don't know about you, but buying a home, there's got to be a few things left over when you move in, right? You've got a chair in the spare bedroom, a box of old photos in the closet. Well, how would you like to find a 19-year-old man's decomposing body in a freezer in the backyard?
Added value.
There you go. So the purchasers of this home in Alabama found just such a body, and the couple has now been arrested and is being investigated for what that body's doing there and why.
Well, my wife is from the Philippines, and I can tell you there's some really strange things in our freezer.
Fran doesn't show up. You know, of course, what the detective will say then, who's investigating, don't you?
What's he going to say?
Yes, that's a good question. What is he going to say? That's it, right there.
So given that Halloween just ended, you know, there's always the trope of the scary clown that seems to be a pretty popular costume. Well, apparently, there's a very surprising reason why up to 5% of the population is terrified of clowns. And it has to go back to the idea that they can't tell if the clown is happy or sad. With the painted-on smile, you can't really tell what it's really feeling. All you see is what's being displayed by the makeup. So, I guess the lesson there is to not put on a fake smile and to always let people know how you really feel.
I do.
Maybe check his driver's license, see if the last name is Gacy.
A high school teacher in Mesa, Arizona, has been suspended without pay, all for his choice in Halloween costumes. He decided that it would be great for Halloween Spirit Week at the high school to dress up as Satan. And the school apparently didn't appreciate that.
What could possibly go wrong?
I don't know. What do you think about that, Ron? I kind of have some questions about his rights to self-expression.
It's a costume.
Yeah.
I have no problem with it.
We have a caller, Krusty, who wants to say something. Never mind.
Thank you, Krusty, for listening and for calling.
Mm-hmm. That's from evilclownlaugh.com.
That's a real site. Wow.
Yeah. No, I just made it up.
Oh, darn. So, on the topic of deceased bodies, which I guess is what I found in the news. I don't know if that's a good sign. A North Dakota woman fatally poisoned her boyfriend hours after he inherited $30 million. Apparently, this individual found out that her boyfriend was going to break up with her, and she took matters into her own hands. I'm not quite sure what the $30 million had to do with that, but apparently it was really important for her to deal with the situation.
She'll have lots of time to think about it.
Reminds me of a friend of mine who asked his wife once, what would you do if I won the lottery? And she said, I would take half and leave. And he said, well, I just won $10. Here's five. Get out.
On a little bit lighter side, swans in Florida are being given their annual physical. These swans date back to swans that were gifted by Queen Elizabeth II to the state of Florida and apparently receive an annual physical every year, and it's time for said physical. It sounds like they're getting better health care than most of the people in Florida.
Probably.
On the same subject as farm animals and poultry and farm produce, that's a stretch. Georgia man recently harvested 186 pounds worth of sweet potatoes off a single plant.
Wow.
I'm just amazed that you can have that many potatoes off a single plant. I didn't know that was even possible.
The swans have a comment.
Maybe those sweet potatoes can be fed to the swans.
Or maybe they'd be a side dish.
Fair point. Circling back down to Florida, a Florida man was recently cited for the interesting paint job on his truck. He painted his truck to say Booty Patrol, and it had a strong resemblance to the Border Patrol paint design. I guess the Border Patrol didn't take it too kindly and arrested him for impersonating an officer.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure how that's going to stand up, but I would love to hear the arguments. There's got to be some great reasons why that's not an illegal paint job.
Do you have a picture of the paint job there? That would help out.
I do. I'll put it up on the radio right now.
Okay. It's most likely going to be up momentarily on Ronald Zach Law Facebook.
And finally, with a circling back to Halloween and the topic of lotteries, man apparently won a lottery prize of over $500,000, or excuse me, $250,000, and couldn't convince his family that he won. Apparently, he had a long history of doing some sort of prank on Halloween, and everyone thought it was a joke and refused to take him seriously.
Hmm.
Even his own mom didn't believe him. I guess it's just a boy who cried wolf one too many times. So that's what I have for the news at the moment. Do you have anything that you would like to add there, Ron?
No, I think because I'm kind of very eager to get to our guests. So let's take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with Sherry Lund talking about probate abuse, probate reform. Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life, the radio show. We're sponsored by Quality of Life Medical and Research Center and co-hosted by Dr. Jack McGettigan and attorney slash nurse practitioner Ronald Zack. And many of you know me from Ronald Zack Law, which is a estate planning and elder law firm that's been around since 2008 in one form or another. And I'm a certified specialist in trusts and estates. And that encompasses wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, conservatorship, and anything in probate court. And we do a lot of litigation in probate court. And a lot of that involves contested guardianships and conservatorships. And Veronica and I advocate fiercely for people. Often the proposed wards and guardianships or proposed, as they say, protected person in conservatorships. Now, 5 days ago on October 30th, some of the most sweeping legislation changes were made, went into effect in Arizona law in the probate code. And a lot of these changes are, well, all of them really, are intended to offer protections for people who are facing losing their rights for making decisions for themselves and rights over their money. And this is often due to abuses by attorneys, licensed fiduciaries, sometimes family members, judges. And the legislation, these changes, some of them are very good. They're going to be extremely difficult, in my opinion, to implement because there is so much resistance from particularly attorneys and judges. But these all came about, in my opinion, largely through the efforts of Sherry Lund, who's our guest today. Welcome to the show, Sherry.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for having me on.
And so you've been involved in really guardianship and conservatorship reform. You've been addressing abuses of those for many, many years, haven't you?
Yes, I have for the past 14 years. And before that, I'm a businesswoman, but I also was an advocate for and have been an advocate for parents who have been abused by family court proceedings. And so, yes, I've been an advocate for about 30 years now.
And it's interesting you bring up abuses by family court, and absolutely I've seen those abuses. And I believe you also have some experience with another area that I was deeply involved in for some time, and that's juvenile court abuses.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, and I at one time had been, I was on both sides of that really, because I had been an assistant attorney general representing what at that time was called CPS, which I came to the conclusion is a corrupt agency and still is. And then later on, excuse me, I represented parents and children and tried to advocate for their individual rights and collective rights. But can you explain what issues you're addressing or we're all trying to address now in probate, in guardianships and conservatorships, and maybe give a couple very brief examples?
Well, I think the key to what we're dealing with is that the judges and attorneys and fiduciaries, guardians, all the officers of the court are not following the law and they're not upholding the constitutional rights of the person or the family. And as long as we continue to have that problem, we're going to have a growing problem with probate, juvenile, and family courts. For instance, in our case, jealous family members, distant family members, and very corrupt trustees of my son's attacked our family when our daughter had a brain aneurysm in California in 2009. And when they heard that our daughter probably wouldn't make it through the weekend, these two trustees knew that my son would inherit her estate. So they ran out, got attorneys, and started lying about my husband, myself, our son, saying he was incompetent to handle that kind of money. The war was on. Within 5 weeks, these people had filed 5 lawsuits against us in Arizona, and we started fighting back. And what I noticed right off the bat in Arizona probate court was that the commissioner did not follow the law. She did not follow the statutes, the rules of court. Our sons, our rights were being violated from the very beginning of the case. And our attorneys were not probate attorneys. We had decided not to hire probate attorneys, but to hire civil attorneys. And the reason being was because of my past experience with family court, juvenile court, and seeing what was going on in the probate courts. So we had to fight for our rights from the very beginning. This commissioner allowed the case to go forward with no clear and convincing evidence. She did not inform our son or us of our rights. It was a free-for-all. Whatever they choose to do, they do. And if the law firm on the other side is in good standing with the court, then that law firm runs the court. And so we quickly found out that no matter what our rights were, no matter what the law said, it was going to go the way they wanted to go. And that was to try to find our son incompetent and just to justify taking over his estate in case our daughter didn't make it. So it was all set up. It was all, I call it the playbook. And this is how we see every case going from the beginning of the case. No one tells the person their rights. The attorneys don't tell the person their rights because they want to be appointed as the attorney over the case so that they can bill the estate. And it is the playbook. I mean, word for word, every case, same situation, every case. So what I found in our case was people were coming to our courtroom because of who our family is, and they were coming to our courtroom to watch and to also meet me and tell me they were a victim of the probate court. And at first I thought, oh my goodness, you know, Lord, I can't help my own family. How am I supposed to help these other people? And I quickly realized that if these people were coming to our courtroom and standing outside and talking to me about their case, then I had a duty to go and listen in on their hearings and see what was happening. And I quickly saw the pattern and practice of abuse in every case that I went to, every hearing I went to. And so I started making my notes, and in the latter part of first part of 2010, I went to my attorney who is also a civil rights attorney. And I said, I need to write a bill and find someone to sponsor it. And we need to make sure these judges start following the law and upholding people's constitutional rights. What's happening here is just organized crime. And so I started meeting with all of these people, and our group grew to, we would have 50, 60 people or more at a meeting, and everyone had the same story. There were just different families, different amounts of money, different details, but it was the same pattern and practice of abuse. And so we worked on the law, on the bill. I took it to one of our state representatives, and who I knew, and he sponsored the bill, and that was, I could write a book on that itself, in the politics and how the judges and attorneys came in and literally fought against protecting our rights and tried to inject themselves into writing law. And in my opinion, and according to the Federalist Papers, the courts have no business in the legislature trying to write law or tell the lawmakers how to write law. It's self-dealing, it's self-serving. And so I ended up working with Adam Driggs, and we combined our bills into what became SB 1499, and then also HB 2424, which was the probate advisory panel. And the probate advisory panel was to provide a panel of people who would be the voice of the people to the legislators. And if there were issues that needed to be amended or bills that needed to be written to protect the people's rights, this panel would work with the legislators to make sure that happened. And because the attorneys and judges and fiduciary companies were so against that, the legislature never put it into effect. It never went anywhere, which was a shame, because that eliminated the ability for the public to have a voice directly into the legislators' offices, especially the judiciary committees. So I watched this go on while I'm fighting the California case and the Arizona case. And ultimately, after I think we filed more appeals in our case than any other case in the history of probate in Arizona. And after 6 years of fighting for our freedom, my son's freedom, for vindicating my husband and I, we had a trial. The judge found that the case should have only lasted 6 weeks at the most, that our family had been vexatiously attacked, and he found our son was competent after the judge had appointed three different doctors to evaluate our son, which should be against the law. And then we hired doctors to evaluate our son because we knew the court friends, the doctors they appoint, are going to give them the results that they want. But
and
I think,
Sherry,
when everybody saw, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, we're gonna take a quick break. We're at the point where where you're going through your case and kind of concluding it. So we'll be right back and we'll finish up right there, okay?
All right.
Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life, the radio show. And this is co-host Ronald Zak. I'm here with Veronica Sternitsky from the law office of Ronald Zak, or Ronald Zak Law, I guess it's called.
Pretty sure it's Ronald Zak Law.
It's Ronald Zak Law. And you can join the conversation if you call 520-790-2040. We're speaking with Sherry Lund, who just had described a case that was her own personal case that got her involved in trying to deal with probate reform, with guardianship and conservatorship abuses that I think are rampant. And yes, I'm an attorney, and I'm one of the people who could be out there benefiting from these cases, but we've chosen to fight them. I've made a lot of enemies, and I don't mind that. But Sherry, you've recently gotten some legislation, you and with a little help, have gotten legislation through. You were talking about the panel. There's a advisory panel that's there was one that had been set up and never implemented. Now there's another piece of legislation requiring a similar panel that will provide some oversight, will hold public hearings, and report back to the legislature, and 11 members are to be appointed. Do you think it's going to work this time?
I think so. We're putting the panel together right now, so I think that that will be very successful. People seem to be very excited about it, except for the judges and attorneys, I might add. And then SB 1291 was a success, and hopefully we can work this session on laws to require the judges and attorneys and court officers to follow the laws and uphold the constitutional rights of the people. And I'm working in Washington to see that we have national laws to make the state courts follow the laws and uphold the rights of the people. So there is a national movement, not just myself, but many groups have grouped together and will be going to Washington together along with many victims to testify as to what they've been through and how it's affected their lives and affected their families' estates. So the one thing that I do tell people, Ron, is advise them to properly set up their estate planning, because most people I talk to don't have estate planning done, and they don't have their powers of attorneys or irrevocable powers of attorneys. In fact, the irrevocable power of attorney is becoming a new big thing because it's irrevocable and people choose who they want to administer their estate and help them with issues. And I think a big part of our bill, too, was the supportive decision making for people who have disabilities. Because right now, if you have any kind of disability, the judge just deems you incompetent and you lose your freedoms. And that means all freedom to decide where you live, what you eat, who you see, whether you can't vote, you cannot get married, you can't drive. So to have all of your rights and your freedoms stripped away without due process is a major, major crime in my eyes.
Sherry, this is the producer. What is the mechanism now in Arizona law to force government appointees to follow the law, if there is one?
Well, there really isn't. People have nowhere to go, and they can report to the state bar, which is under control of the court, the Supreme Court. They can go to the fiduciary board and file a complaint, but then the Supreme Court is over the fiduciary board. Nothing happens. They could go to the Judiciary Committee, Commission on Performance, file a complaint. It goes nowhere because it's also overseen by the Supreme Court. When the Supreme Court should not be able to oversee all of the courts, it's really a conflict of interest. And when you have no outside oversight, you're going to have corruption. It's inevitable.
Maybe the word supreme goes to their head.
I think that's one of the problems. And
well,
accountability.
We are supposed to have three distinct branches of government, and the legislature should be the ones who can police the Supreme Court. The executive branch can have some part in that. But why are they so reluctant to do their duty?
Well, if you look at it this way, the judges don't break the law and violate people's rights for no reason. They are benefiting. So, you know, we've also been able to track money going from law firms to judges' companies to loans that aren't paid back to paying off mortgages that judges take out on their homes. It truly is the biggest racket in the world, and there is a benefit. So that's why they don't want anyone coming in and saying, you're breaking the law, you're violating people's rights. They have had this racket going for so many years, and nobody has overseen the court. So it's its own little secret court.
The legislature does have the power to oversee the courts. They can impeach and remove justices from the Supreme Court. That's their job.
Don't know that these things are going on, then how are they going to know? I have educated so many legislators this last year on the crimes going on within the probate court and some family court issues and juvenile court issues, and they're astounded. They have no idea because there is no oversight. And I agree with you. The legislature should take back oversight of the courts. And there should be a division within the legislature that oversees the court. And it should not, I'm sorry, but attorneys, judges, no one should be on that committee that has a conflict of interest, or it could be considered self-dealing or conflict of interest. So I do agree with you. We need some stronger, maybe national laws. We do have 18 U.S.C. 242 that, under color of law, if the judges, police, officers of the court commit crimes that violate the constitutional rights of the people, they can end up in prison. No one wants to talk about that. All I hear at the legislature is, oh, the courts are telling us there's a separation of powers. No, there isn't. The lawmakers are the supreme power in the state. They make the laws that the courts have to follow.
I'm sorry, but that's simply not accurate. Lawmakers aren't supreme. We have three distinct branches of government. No one is above any other.
Well, I'm just saying, though, that when the lawmakers make the laws for the courts to follow, they have to follow those laws, just like SB 1499, SB 1291. Although that's why they don't like those laws, because they don't want to have to follow them. And what they do is say, we're going to use our discretion, which is actually all of them agreeing they're going to abuse the law and abuse their discretion.
Do we have an idea of how many legislators are attorneys also? I know there's quite a few.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't, and that I need to find out.
Yeah, I would really like to see that. We do have a caller on the line with a question for Sherry. Daniel, thank you very much for listening and for calling.
Yes, thank you. I've done a little bit of work in Washington. I can tell you the number of lawyers that become politicians is upward of 90%. And all they do is help themselves in the future. But my question is this: what's happened to our news organizations, newspapers and radio and so forth? Investigating journalists should be telling you and the public of what's going on, and that these people are obviously violating the laws.
We are, Daniel.
Yes, you are this in one. This small organization, but we have major news organizations all around the country, and they're not telling us any of this.
Well, I can tell you, Daniel, from working, I work with the media, and I have exposed a lot of these stories. We just had a segment on Thursday evening on ABC 15, but I can also tell you that the biggest problem is that attorneys are running these media outlets. They're telling the reporters how far they can go. You can say this, you can't say that. These attorneys that are running these big media corporations are protecting the other attorneys. They all have taken an oath. They're all officers of the court. It really, when you find a good attorney that's fighting for your rights, like we did, and some others that I know of here and in California, they get disbarred, they get threatened. One of our attorneys was arrested in court for
refusing to disclose awful lot of pressure.
Attorney-client privilege. There is.
And I've experienced a lot of that pressure, experiencing threats from the court. We're going to take a break. Thank you, Daniel. We'll be right back with Sherry Lund, and we'll finish up the show. Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life Radio Show. This is co-host Ronald Zack from Ronald Zack Law and Quality of Life Medical and Research Center. And we're also here with Veronica Sternitsky, attorney at Ronald Zack Law. And, you know, of course, Charles Heller is there behind the curtain.
It's all right.
You can call our show, join the conversation at 520-790-2040. Just as Melinda is on the line with a question for Sherry. Hello, Melinda, thanks for listening and thanks for calling.
Me. Sherry, I'm not sure if you know that we have no separation of powers in Arizona. The judges are coming to the judiciary, and their lobbyists are coming to speak to our legislators and to talk them out of passing the bills. Article 4 of our Constitution says that it is to the people and to the legislature. There's no mention of the judiciary. The only time a judge has power is when he's got a case in front of him. They are running the state. They are running the state, and they have interfered with many bills that I've been involved with. And they send their lobbyists. The lobbyists call their, you know, whoever's running the you know, usually it's HHS with me because I'm fighting DCS. They tell them drop the bill.
Sherry?
Right. I that's what I was saying, though, is that the courts, and I've been in these stakeholders meetings and have hired a lobbyist and worked with a media team to on my bills. And what the courts and the attorneys are telling us is there's a separation of power, and I'm saying no, there isn't. When the lawmakers pass a law, and the governor signs it and it becomes law, the court has to follow those laws, those new laws. But the court isn't following them. So I think we do have a bigger problem. That's why I'm already in Washington. We're already talking to people. We're having great results. Washington says they know there's a problem. Give us an ask. So the ask is very simple. Pass laws that are going to make the state courts and the attorneys and fiduciaries follow the laws and uphold people's constitutional rights. You know, there are over $50 billion under court supervision in the U.S., and over 2 million people are under guardianship and conservatorship, and probably half of those people shouldn't be. They have the ability to say what they want and who they want to be in charge of their care, of their, if they need help, of their estates. And I'm always encouraging people to get their estate planning done and do it correctly. I deal with trust attorneys. I'm a trustee. I've been a trustee for 40 some years on several trusts. And I see what's happening to these trusts, and the courts are removing, you know, the person's appointment of a trustee and putting the judge's attorney buddies on as trustees.
Sherry, do you have model legislation?
Pardon me?
Do you have model legislation?
1291 is our perfect
Got
bill.
It.
I think it's perfect.
And Melinda, did you have a really fast follow-up question,
yes.
Not a statement?
Okay, in Arizona, we have there is no judicial wing to the Congress from SCOTUS. When they go to SCOTUS, they sit on their hands and they keep their mouths shut when they go to the Capitol. There's no legislative wing of SCOTUS. So, but we've got one in Arizona. They run the entire state.
Well, that would be an issue for the individual legislative bodies to decide if they want to hear from the court. I mean, that's certainly within the purview of the House and the Senate to decide, yeah, we want to hear what the judges think, or no, we don't.
Well, and then you're saying, Veronica, that it appears that the legislature has chosen to relinquish power to the courts?
That's kind of, yeah, what it sounds like.
Could be.
I mean, that would seem to...
Well, that's what our Arizona Constitution says, that the oversight of the courts is given to the Supreme Court, Arizona, mm-hmm, Supreme Court. So when they're overseeing themselves and every division underneath, then you know that that's a conflict of interest, and it just breeds corruption.
So
there's no other way.
Are you suggesting that you want to see an amendment to the Arizona Constitution?
If that's what it takes, and if we need national law, that's also what we're working on, because we need these judges to follow the law, and they're just refusing.
And so, Sherry, there's this is something that's going on all over the country. Arizona is not the only state that's having issues with guardianships, conservatorships. Are there, you're not alone in Washington, aren't there many other advocates there advocating for these changes or for the federal government to intervene?
There are a lot of groups going to Washington and talking to our Congress and Senate. We're doing it a little bit differently. We've done something different by starting in the state. There are other people doing things around the country, but they've done them in a different way. I think if you're really going to get anywhere, you have to go to your lawmakers in your state and educate them as to what's going on right under their nose, because they don't know. They do not know what's going on.
Are there other public interest law groups that are getting involved? This seems like a natural for Goldwater.
It is. We have some other law groups across the country. We have some law groups that have come to me here in Arizona that want to see this. They think the judges have given themselves too much immunity and they're breaking the laws. They're not upholding people's rights. So there is a lot going on, and I think it's hard for attorneys to stand up. They don't want to be punished, and they don't want their clients to be punished for being, zealously defending their case. And no attorney should be punished for following the law and trying to protect their client. This is where you can see that we're really off. There's something really off base.
And Sherry,
when someone gets punished.
In terms of other groups, and I know I'm not the biggest fan of the ACLU, but I think the ACLU has played somewhat of a role. I know that they've been active in the supported decision-making agreement arena. Are we getting any help from that group?
We are, and we're seeing all these groups now. I think when they see that this disability issue does affect almost every case. So when you have someone who has mild dementia or mild Asperger's, and the judge just wants to clarify or declare them incompetent, that's depriving the person of their due process. That's depriving the person of their rights to be heard. And I think we're seeing a lot of law firms come forward. I have people calling me all the time, our law firm wants to know what can we do to help on this accountability and immunity issue, because it's gotten out of control. And what happens is you'll see in a case, you see two sides. You'll see the petitioner's side, and then you see the person, defending themselves, or the family defending the person they love and defending themselves. And it's So we're getting, you know, the stories are all across the country.
It's happening. Sherry, we're coming very close to the end of the show. We've got about a little over a minute left. If people want to get in touch with you, or if people want to follow your activities or somehow get involved, what do you suggest to them? Where can they go? Where can they find information and find you?
Well, they can go to Facebook to Protect Liberty and leave a message there, and we can get back in touch with them. And we also have a website. It's Citizens 4, Clean Courts USA, and the website is c4ccusa.org. And we're revamping that website right now so that we can post other stories and documents. People are starting to really take a role in defending themselves. So we're trying to do that as more of an educational website.
Okay, Sherry Lund, thank you so much. We're going to put this information up also on the Ronald Zach Law Facebook page, and people can follow these stories.
Thank you, Ron.
Oh, you're so welcome. I hope you'll come back again, and I'd like to do periodic updates on this. Is that okay?
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sherry. It's been great talking to you. And thank you, everybody who's listening. Thanks, Melinda and Daniel, for calling. And thanks to everyone else who's listening. We're going to be back next week, same time, same station.